My name's Indradyumna Swami. Namaste. Hare Krishna. For the past 40 some odd years, I've spent most of my time traveling in different parts of the world, introducing people to the philosophy and culture of Bhakti Yoga. And of course, that includes bhajan and kirtan. So it's very nice to come back home, in one sense. Actually, I'm from California. I'm from San Francisco. It's very nice to come back home and see such a growing interest in bhakti, and in particular kirtan, which is the means by which we awaken our bhakti, our devotion, our love for the Supreme. My good friend Sridhar, Sri Sridhar, invited me to the Shakti Fest. I don't know if any of you were there, but I was amazed that how many people are actually interested in this way of life. It wasn't there when I was present in the 60s here in America, and particularly kirtan. And of course, obviously, I'm a member of the Hare Krishna movement. I was amazed to see how popular that chant has become. Even outside of our movement, our society, it seems that it's one of the favorite mantras. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Most of you probably know, some of you don't, that although this culture of bhakti and the chanting of Hare Krishna is new in the West, actually it's been existing in India for, I was going to say hundreds, but actually thousands, or you could even say millions of years. India is the home of bhakti. In more recent history, let us say, going back several hundred years, there was a great movement of bhakti that was inaugurated in India, specifically in West Bengal, by an avatar of Krishna. There's many avatars who visit the earth. Avatar means one who descends from the spiritual world, from the transcendental realm. So throughout the history of mankind, many avatars have come. It's stated in the Bhagavad Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ite cham sa kalopumsha, Krishnishtu Bhagavan Shwayam, Indriya vyakalam lokam, vidayute juge juge. That Krishna is avatari, it means he's the source of all the incarnations, and he sends these incarnations, or he himself comes as these incarnations, and they're as unlimited as the waves in the ocean. That's how many avatars have descended on earth for the sole purpose of enlightening us as to who we are, what is the ultimate goal of life, and how to achieve it. The most recent avatar, according to that same ancient text, Bhagavad Purana, is called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How many of you have heard of Chaitanya or Chaitanya? It's interesting to know the Bhagavatam was written millions of years ago. According to the rishis, according to the sadhus, according to the yogis, and we take them very seriously, more than our scientists, because they're self-realized, Bhagavatam was written millions of years ago. And in that Bhagavatam is a prediction of the appearance of Chaitanya, who appeared only 500 years ago. It states, Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Shango Pangasha Parshadam Yagnai Sankitan Payar Yajantihi Shumedashah. That the same Lord Krishna who appeared in the previous age, because Vedic culture sees the cosmos divided into four periods, Satya, Treta, Dipura, and Kali. It evolves in four ages. The previous age was called Dipura Yuga, and that's the age in which Krishna appeared in his original transcendental form, spiritual form, and he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. How many of you have read Bhagavad Gita? It's the fundamental work of Hinduism or Indian culture philosophy. So Krishna Varnam Pushab Krishna, the same personality who appeared 5,000 years ago and gave us the wisdom of the Gita, has appeared again. But not in a bluish-black form, like you see pictures of Krishna playing his flute. This is his spiritual color. That same personality has appeared again in Kali Yuga. That's quite amazing, because Kali Yuga is described as a very materialistic age, an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. He's appeared again in Kali Yuga, and he can be recognized by the fact that he's golden. He who was bluish has become golden. And he's singing his own sweet holy names. And he's always surrounded by his devotees who are very melodiously singing and dancing, specifically the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Another interesting point, historical point, is Mahaprabhu, we call him Mahaprabhu, means the great master. He spread this chanting all around India. At that time there were, and there still are, many different adherents of different yoga paths and jnana paths of study of the Vedas and different bhakti cults as well. But Lord Chaitanya traveled around India for 16 years, or 18 years, and he shared this chanting with everyone. And at one point in his travels, he told his followers that one day this chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, would go to every town and village of the world. This is 500 years ago. We don't need Nostradamus to see these things. The Vedic scriptures are full of predictions for this age, particularly the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. If you read it and you compare it to what's happening in society, it's like, wow, how did they get it so right? Because they've taught the darshis. Due to their spiritual advancement, due to their spiritual vision, these personalities, these rishis in days of yore, they could see the past, they could see the present, and they could see the future. So, Mahaprabhu said that one day this chanting will go to every town and village of the world. So, when I was at Shakti Fest, and I was sitting and watching so many people, many who may not even know about the Hare Krishna movement, I mean, it is well known, but I meet people all the time. Are you a Buddhist? No, I'm Hare Krishna. What's that? You don't know. I was surprised, those people also, that beautiful, sweet name of the Lord was dancing on their tongue and they were very joyful as a result. Now, Lord Chaitanya was a bit of a revolutionary because the social norm was that a saintly person would stay in the ashram and he would study the Vedas. And he would practice penance and austerity. And he wouldn't mingle with the public. And he was dressed very simple and eat frugally like this. This is a holy man. Still is. But Lord Chaitanya was a revolutionary because he was going through the towns and villages of India singing and dancing with his associates. He was actually a monk. He was in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi. He'd renounced all worldly pleasures. And here he is singing and dancing for the countryside. Got a lot of criticism for that. But actually, the beauty of this incarnation is that he distributed this holy names of Krishna without discrimination. He didn't see someone's qualified to get bhakti, someone's not qualified to get bhakti. He didn't think like that. There's a class of men in India called Smarta Brahmins. You've heard of Brahmins? They're like the priestly class. So the Smarta Brahmins, they actually developed this caste system. It doesn't really exist in the original Vedic culture. They manipulated people. They were, you know, priests and they were learned, but they became arrogant. Pride cometh before a fall. They became a little arrogant and they started saying only people who are born in Brahmin families can become self-realized. All you other people, you have to wait till you take your next birth, and maybe you'll take birth as a brahmana. This is not how Krishna intended it. Krishna says he's the seed-giving father of all living entities. So every created being is actually a son or a daughter of the Lord, and he's desiring that we get out of the entanglement of material life and return to the transcendental abode where we live a free, loving existence. So Chaitanya, this avatar, he said, no, everyone is qualified to chant Hare Krishna and awaken their prema. This is another word that I see in America in the yoga circles. Everyone's talking about prema. The actual definition of prema is love. But really, prema refers to divine love. The love we have in this world, as important as it is to us, by the nature of this of life, it's temporary. Even Romeo and Juliet's idyllic love affair came to an end. It's kind of hard to accept, but that's the way life is. So it's not speaking about that love, it's speaking about an eternal divine love, an eternal relationship with someone who's the perfect lover. And according to Vedic scriptures, that's Krishna. That's the form of the Supreme Lord. He's a person. He's not a light or an energy. He's actually a person. And he can perfectly reciprocate the loving desires of every created living being. So that's the actual meaning of prema. And we all have, inherently, we have that prema, that original love, that divine love, the most satisfying love. Savaipum shampara dharmo yato bhaktir doksaje haitukiya patiyata yayatma shupashidati. Same book, Bhagavatam. The supreme occupation for all men and women is that by which they can awaken that prema for the Supreme. That's the supreme occupation. But it must be a haitakya patiyata. It must be unmotivated and uninterrupted. It must be pure love. And then yayatma shupasidati. If you direct your love towards the Supreme Being, yayatma shupasidati, you achieve a happiness, or a pleasure, a satisfaction in your life that's unequaled by anything in this world. And that's there in our hearts. Some people know it. You know it. Because you come to Bhakti Shala. And under the direction of Govinda Das and his wife Radha, they're training you how to awaken that prema. That's the purpose of this center. Most people don't know it. But still it's there. Like George Harrison, he was a friend of our movement, and he gave a large donation to one book my guru published called The Krishna Book, a summary study of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana. And Prabhupada, my guru, asked him to write, oh, you're so kind, you've given this money, can you write an introduction? So George, you know, he said, sure. And I only remember one part, he said, everyone's looking for Krishna. Some know it and some don't. That's true. It's there in a seed-like form. It's our intrinsic nature. Love. The intrinsic nature of salt is that it's salty. You can't separate saltiness from salt. The intrinsic nature of sugar is that it's sweet. You can't separate sweetness from sugar. The intrinsic nature of what? Water is wetness. So what is your intrinsic nature? Not the body, the skeleton, the blood, the muscles, the bones, the mucus, the hairs. You see, which is in constant transformation, always changing. And you are changing from body to body, life. Not that, but you, the force within, what gives life to the body, the self, the Atman. What is your real nature? To love and to be loved. Even though love in this world is imperfect because of its temporary nature, still we get a clue, like, if you have everything in this world, I don't know who, like, Bill Gates, just to use one example, $5 billion. If you have everything in this world, but you don't have someone to love, you can't be happy. But if you have nothing, and I've been to parts of the world. I've traveled throughout Africa, been in China, all through India. I've been through Mongolia. If you have nothing, But you have someone to love, you can be happy. In my times, we had Janis Joplin. I came down here for a concert to LA. I was thinking about it. Don't you need somebody to love? Don't you want somebody to love? And then she'd drink her Southern Comfort. But she was on the right path in the sense that we all want someone to love. So that divine love, Yayatma Supasidati, that love which is, it doesn't end. It's called Ananda. It has no end. It's just increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing with no imperfection. That's what we want. Now, how do we get it? Well, the avatar for this age, Chaitanya, he's given a very simple process. In every age, there's a different process because people are different. Even 10 years ago, people were different. 50 years ago, people were different. I think of my parents. I think of myself. If I only knew then what I know now. So, in every age, the Satya Yuga, this vast time frame of millions of years, Treta Yuga, every age the Lord comes, and Dharman Tu Sakshat Bhagavat Panitam. He introduces a process, he kind of checks everybody out, okay, for these people, this age, meditation, next age, Agnihotra, next age, visit the temples, or visit the mosque, or visit the church, or whatever, you know, whatever path you feel comfortable with that brings you closer to God. No one has a monopoly on the truth. So in this age, he said, Harinam 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 Eva Kevalam Lo Nasteva 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 Gatir Anyathat. Actually, he's quoting Brihad Narayan Purana. In India, if you give a talk, you always have to quote the previous saints, your guru of the scriptures, because that makes it authoritative. We can't imagine these, concoct these things on ourselves. It's all knowledge that comes down from higher authority. So it says, in the age of Kali, the most sublime and blissful and happy way to awaken that seed is to chant. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Like how does a seed grow? A seed can stay in the shelf, in the store, for years. It doesn't, how do you say it when it grows? Sprout, thank you. It doesn't sprout. It can stay there for years. I remember we used to go to the store with my dad in the spring. We'd buy those little packets. They still do it like that, those little packets. Put them in the ground and, you know, what next, Dad? Gotta wait, son. So then we watered it. And lo and behold, this was one of my first experiences of the glory of life. Out from that seed we planted came this little creeper. And, you know, through the summer, I just loved to go to the garden, see it grow, and I almost felt guilty picking the fruit. You know, I apologized to the cauliflower plant. Excuse me. But it's there in the seed. So all of us have this heritage. This is our real heritage. Somebody phoned me the other day, some call company. Would you like to go on ancestor.com and find out who your family members from the past? I said, no, I already know. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Durga, Krishna. I don't. You know that's they know this relative history here to do with this one body. But what about all the other bodies? And what is the spiritual heritage? This is real science. Science means to discover the unknown, to go into a real frontier. The real frontier is going within and finding who we really are. Who is the absolute truth and what is our relationship with Him? That's the perfection of the science of self-realization. So all of you have seen, because you're all practitioners, you've chanted various mantras, which all of the mantras have a certain powerful effect. And you've chanted this mantra, Hare Krishna, and you especially see how the Hare Krishnas are a bit crazy. They're down there on the Santa Monica Street, chanting down the street in public, you know, like, what are those crazy guys doing? One guy said to me, well, I was in Paris recently, and one guy said, you know, what drugs are you guys taking? You know, what beer do you drink? Hey, I gave that up 44 years ago. How's it possible? I said, try it.
I'll never chant Hare Krishna.
Okay. You will someday. it's so powerful that even a person who has no interest, actually they can be affected by that chanting. That's how powerful it is. You're experiencing the fruit by chanting, but even a person who has absolutely nothing, let's say an atheist, agnostic, or just totally materialist, doesn't care about yoga, vegetarianism, doesn't live a sattvic life, he can also be affected. It's like if you go to the doctor and you ask, a doctor prescribes a medicine for you, you take the medicine. You don't know it's working. You just take it unconsciously. It's working, working, working. So the Maha Mantra is like that. And I'll tell you one story. There was once a hunter. It's a true story. His name was Magrari. Magrari means one who causes pain to others. And he was a hunter by profession. You know, that now we have slaughterhouses, but in days of yore, people would procure their meat by hunting. And hunters in the rishis and the yogis, the sadhus, they refer to the hunters as atmahanas. Atmahana. It's a heavy word. Atmahana. It means killer of the soul. Now, those of you who have read Bhagavad Gita, you know the soul cannot be killed. Najayate, Mriyate, Bhakara Chin, Nayam, Bhutva, Bhavita, Vanuva. For the soul, there's never birth nor death. Having one's been, as he ever ceased to be, he's unborn, undying, primeval. The soul is not slain when the body is slain. The body decomposes, the soul goes on to another body. If he's self-realized, he transcends. So, but the hunters call that mahana. It seems contradictory. What it means, one rishi explained it to me one time, what it means is it kills that person's chances for self-realization, for real life, for spiritual life. So this is the meat eaters, because a meat eater, everyone enjoys eating, but his the pleasure of eating is at the expense of someone else's life. Of course, most people don't think animals have souls. But, they eat, we eat, they sleep, we sleep, they mate, we mate, they defend, they have the vocabulary, we have the vocabulary, you know, you go back and forth, everything's there. The only difference is, they don't have the intelligence we have. So the soul is there. Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gava hastane sunishada pakachis. Pandita Samadarshana, Pandit, he sees with equal vision an elephant, cow, a dog, and a dog eater. He sees they have different karma, so they're placed in different bodies. But he sees there's life in every creature. Wherever there's consciousness, consciousness is a sign of life. If someone dead, there's no consciousness, it means the soul's gone. So if you see consciousness in a dog or a cat like that, yeah, they're souls, they're your brother and sister. In India, people even avoid stepping on ants. So, but he was a killer. And he killed the animal. He'd shoot the animal in such a way that it would die slowly. In other words, he used to torture animals. Like they have waterboarding, and they stopped waterboarding now, right, in the military. But they used to, that was like waterboarding. So there was this one saint, he heard about him. And just to show the potency of the mantra, he decided to deliver him by giving him the mantra. Now, how do you give a mantra to a guy as a hunter? So he went there and he said, "Sir, what are you doing?" "Well, you know, I learned this from my father. It's our family tradition. But you should give it up. It's very cruel." "No, I can't do it. So this Narada Muni, who's a rishi, he's a mystic. He went, he made a vision. And the hunter could see the results of his activities. That's called karma. Karma means for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. What goes around comes around, as we say in Australia. So if you kill, you will be killed. If you do good, good will come back to you. Very basic. So all these animals who he killed, they were coming back for their revenge. He put down his bow. He said, Baba, help! So the saint, Narada, he said, all right, just chant this mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Oh, he said, okay. So he sat down, he chanted, the sage stayed there for a few days, and as he got purified, he started asking what else he could do. So he gave up his skins and became vegetarian, had a loincloth. He had a wife, she followed suit. They sat down by the Ganges River, and they sat and chanted in front of a tulsi plant. It's a very sacred plant in India, so they were chanting there. Years went by. It got to the point that he became so purified that bhakti began to come from within his heart, and he started crying tears of love for the divine, for Krishna. Some very advanced stage, not to be imitated. It's paraphrased by Sri Rupa Goswami. As young boys are attracted to young girls, and young girls are attracted to young boys, my dear Lord, in the same way, but in a transcendental way, pure transcendental love, with the same intensity, let me be attracted to you. Now, don't you sometimes cry in your loving relationships? You're so happy. You can cry on the transcendental platform also for God. This is real bhakti. This is prema. So, it just so happened that the rishi, the sage, Narada, he was traveling by that part of the universe. And he came to the earth planet, and he had a mate with him, a friend with him. His name was Agastya Muni. He said, hey, Agastya, I initiated a hunter into the chanting of this mantra many, many years ago. Let's go see how he's doing. So they alighted, you know, because they can fly, these mystics. They alighted in the meadow, and they started walking towards the hermitage where Magrari lived. And when Magrari saw his guru coming, he stood up and started walking to receive him. That's the proper etiquette. When a saintly person comes to your residence, you walk to receive him, and then you walk him to his chariot or to his horse or to his car or whatever. That's Vedic etiquette, how you receive a saintly person. So he started walking, and they were coming like this, and all of a sudden, the hunter stopped. And Agastya Muni said, how offensive. He's expecting you to walk to him. How offensive. This is guru aparat. This is an offense to the offense, and he'll receive a grievous reaction for that if you offend your guru. So Narada said, no, I don't think, let's get a little closer. They came closer, and what happened were there these ants walking across the path, a big, wide, and Narada, or rather Magrari, who was previously a hunter, Atmahana, killer of the soul, he was so realized now, he could see the true equality of all living beings, respected those souls, he wouldn't go any further. This is a true story. The Puranas are not mythology, they're actually histories of the universe. So this is the power of transcendental sound. It's said that Om Anapita Shabdhat, that by sound we become conditioned. You listen to rock and roll, you listen to hip hop, you listen to Beethoven, whatever. It's music, but it's coming from a materialistic platform, so it conditions you. Sound also liberates you. Glok Premdan Harinam Sankirtan. These mantras are not of this world. We chant mantras to the demigods. These mantras are given to as a means of worshipping the demigods. Of course, by worshipping the demigods, one doesn't achieve the same result because demigods themselves are to a certain degree controlled by material nature, and at best they can give, their blessings are material benedictions. They can't give mukti, liberation. They're on their way because they're very dear associates of the Supreme Lord. They're doing seva for him by administrating the cosmic manifestation. But they're not yet in the spiritual world. But this mantra, Hare Krishna. Gol Prenda Harinam Sankirtan. This mantra has come directly from the highest planet in the spiritual world, below Lokadana. So sound has great potency. If you just turn on the radio, right? You're just in a neutral mood. Turn on the radio, and a happy song comes, and hey, why do we listen to music? We want to get happy. We're in a bad mood. We turn on some good music. Oh, I'm okay now. It's just music. It's music. It's sound vibration going in your ear into your heart and affecting your consciousness. You turn the dial, you come to the blues. She left me all alone, crying, all in debt. You go, hey, she did the same thing to me. Or he did the same thing to me. Right? Usually that's the way, it's the other way around, usually. So then you get sad. What is it? It's sound vibration. You go a little further, there's some news about, you know, there's an election and, you know, the opposition, the guy you didn't want, whatever, the Republican, the Democrat, you get angry. You see how effective sound is? So why do rishis live in the forest? Because the forest is the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means vibrations that are not like in ignorance or passion, but are instrumental to thinking of higher subject matter. The birds, the whistling of the trees, the footprints of the deer. This is sattvic. That's why they don't live in the cities, the rishis. It's very clear. But to go higher, they chant transcendental sounds. Like Sai Krishna mantra. So why is this mantra called Maha mantra? Maha means great. It's called the great chant for deliverance. Why is it called the Maha mantra? Because it's an amazing effect. And I don't know if all of you know, although you're very happy chanters. That's so nice. But this vibration begins by cleansing the heart. Why do we need to cleanse the heart? Not that literally the heart, but your inner self. What's wrong there? Well, it got contaminated due to association with these modes of nature, ignorance, passion. We got contaminated in our journey through life. We've seen too many bad things, heard too many bad things, thought too many bad things, done too many bad things. And it collects the karmic reactions, not only in this life, but in many lifetimes. Brahmanda Brahmati Konya Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasad Bhai Bhakti Lata Beast. We've been going through it for millions of lives. So what happens is when you chant, it's just like you have something on your computer and you delete it. That's what happens. When you chant this Maha Mantra. That's why it's called Maha Mantra. All the karma that's stored in the heart for many lifetimes, who wouldn't chant? Who, upon hearing this authorized description of the power of mantra, would not regularly chant a divine mantra like the Hare Krishna? There's other mantras too. Raghupati Raghava Rajaram Patita Pavana Sitaram. If you're a devotee of Ram, you can chant that mantra. If you're a devotee of Narsingh, Namaste Narasingaya Praladala Hidayane Hiranyakasipu. Whatever your Ishtadev is, whatever path you've chosen, whatever David, whatever divine, supreme person that you're, then that has that potency there. So, and then what? Well, there's three things. The second thing is it uproots material desires. We are so attached because of our desires. That's why we take birth after birth after birth. We have unfulfilled desires. That's the nature of desire. We don't realize it, but the rishis point out, you think you're satisfying the desire, but actually what's happening is you're just scratching the itch. You get a temporary relief, and then it flares back up. That's why some people have 10, 20 shoes in the closet, 4 or 5 suits, you know, 2 cars in the garage, 2... These desires burn incessantly. So we have so many, it's described like the roots of a banyan tree. We can't get out of material life because we're attached to the wrong things. We should be attached, but attached to transcendental personalities, attached to transcendental food, attached to other transcendentalists, attached to going to holy places, attached to doing business and helping spiritual organizations. But we're attached to the wrong things. So what the mantra does is it pulls out the banyan tree roots and throws them to the 12th dimension, wherever that is. Now what's left? See? Just like you have a garden and you have a beautiful rose plant, but it's just surrounded by weeds and brambles. You haven't, you know, tended the garden in years. What you do, your first order of business, clean all the weeds, pull them out, and then you water the rose. It's a scientific process. So, but you're doing three simultaneously. You're chanting like we chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Volumes of karma, Cheto, Dharpana, Marta, just like, if you could see it, if you had spiritual vision, if you had a third eye. Third eye is figurative, but it means people who can see things, Tattvadarshis, they can actually see these things just washing away from the heart. And they can see these roots, you know, lust, anger, and greed, envy, jealousy, and they can see that flowering bud of devotion to the divine maturing in your heart. So that's why many of us, many of us, can I have some Java beads? Many of us, we don't just chant bhajan and kirtan, we chant japa. In the Gita, Krishna says that of sacrifices, he is the chanting of japa, of the holy names. Do you mind if I say it? So we have the 108 beads because Mahaprabhu, he actually recommended, because life is so short. Kirtana yatsarahi. Chant as much as you can. You can only be the gainer. So when we're not in kirtan, we're not dancing on the streets, we're chanting on these beads. Now, these beads are, I think, about 40 years old, and they were probably white-colored and rough when Maharaj got them, but you can see what a chanter he is. And if you look at his smile, that's the result. So we take the beads like this, and you know, when on our way to school and the way to work, we're following that same ancient formula. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Shango Panga Shiparshadam Yagnai Senkitan Payar Jantihi Shumeda Shahada, introduced by Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Now we chant 2 hours a day. The same mantra over and over, 2 hours a day, plus 2 hours on the street, plus 2 hours in the evening. You know, most of us chant 6 hours a day for 45 years. Now you take, can you give this back to Maharaj? You take in your favorite song in this world, you know, and you sing it like for 2 days, okay, 3 days, 5 days. 1 week, 1 month, 45 years, you didn't have a mental asylum. So how is it that in our tradition and in India, because those of you who've been to India, you've seen how common the chanting of Hare Krishna is, how many sadhus are chanting on beads, especially in Vrindavan and in Jagannath Puri and Mayapur. How is it that we go, there must be something very special, because we never get tired. You never get stale or dry, or because it's completely transcendental, the pleasure is always increasing. Why is the pleasure increasing? Because that Supreme Personality of Godhead is described as the reservoir of all pleasure. What we have in this world is little drops of pleasure. Like if you go to the desert, and somebody, you know, you're dying of thirst, and somebody brings a bucket of water, and you go, oh, wow! They take their finger in, they took it in, and then they say, open your mouth, and they put some water in your mouth. You have water. Yeah, but I need more water. Right? So we'll never satisfy our longings for happiness in this world because it's a world of duality. Up and down, black and white, boy and girl. Happiness and distress, so it's not a perfect place. So you just get a little drop, but if you want to enter the ocean of happiness, chant. Because that reservoir of pleasure, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys all these loving pastimes, the limited devotees in the transcendental realm, very beautiful, intimate, loving pastimes with his devotees, he's present in that sound, Hare Krishna. Like if you chant Coca-Cola, 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 you're not going to get the taste of Coke. But if you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, you're actually, Prabhupada said, Krishna's dancing on the tip of your tongue. You are associating with that person who emanates the highest pleasure. How is it that you, when you're chanting, you smile and you get up and you start dancing? Usually people have to take a few drinks in strangers' company to start dancing. It's because this, the Lord is present in the sound. So any name, Ram, Sringa, Krishna, as I mentioned, there's many avatars. But Avatari, the source of all avatars, he who can reciprocate most intimately with our living desires, is described as Krishna. So with that in mind, we will chant. That must be the natural conclusion of such a discourse. If we just gave our discourse and went away, that would be very incomplete. It's like giving someone hors d'oeuvres at your house, and when it's time for the meal, you send them home. What is that? You whet the appetite with the olives and the whatever, crackers and the nuts, you know, because the digestion gets, and then they're like hungry, and then you give them dinner. So this philosophy, spiritual life without philosophy, becomes sentiment. We have to have a philosophical understanding of what we're doing to get the most out of it. And that's why there's so many books in Vedic culture, to make it authoritative and to explain it and to help us understand why we're chanting. Otherwise, we won't get the full benefit. Like a kid, he sees a jewel in mommy's dish and he thinks, oh, it looks yummy. Mother's knowing the value of that jewel. If she pawned it, she'd get $10,000. So the more you understand about these subject matters, purpose of life, how to achieve it, the goal of life, the means, you know, the chanting, the mantra, the position of the guru, and all this. The more we have discourses on this, then, oh yeah, now I'm going to really try. Now I'm going to really, because it takes time for these things to happen, so you have to make an investment. Sometimes you're not in the mood, but you still have to chant. You still have to do your yoga. So we've explained with the hope that this evening you have a deeper appreciation of the history of chanting, the history of the bhakti movement as it was introduced by Lord Chaitanya, and the potency of this mantra to make you a better person. Yayatma supasidati, to make you more happy, more peaceful, more satisfied person. So I thank you all for giving me the opportunity. Actually, this knowledge I learned from my spiritual teacher, Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, so I give the credit to him. I'm just like a parrot, repeating without any realization, but the philosophy is there, and those who are, I feel, are sincere will understand and take up the process and make their lives perfect. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.